Back at it, you and I chatting it up Thursday style, September 25th, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. I open the show with news about the latest legal twist in the ongoing Bridgeport absentee ballot mess. Was a sentence handed down a bit too lenient to one defendant? Former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso dropped by with his thoughts on the latest absentee ballot developments. And former Wall Street Journal reporter Ken Raposa, he was on the show talking about what China might be planning for the U.S. prescription drug market.
You know, one thing we all have to figure out and whatever, these canvassers, these absentee ballot canvassers, these men and women who get talked about and get snared up in legal proceedings with the Ghanem campaign, allegedly with the Gomes campaigns. Who is watching these people? Who's minding the store? What are they being told? And we hear about, you know, low-level people, and this isn't really a mover and a shaker. Wait a minute, you mean they're not being told anything? Come on, please. Story today, Ethan Frye's story in the Connecticut Post, and again, another twist and turn in the ongoing, never ends, Bridgeport absentee ballot scandal. The rot never ends in Bridgeport. It just keeps rotting more and more. And I'm sorry to say that, but come on, this is getting ridiculous now. Defendant in the Bridgeport absentee ballot probe is expected to get probation. Okay, maybe people don't get jail time. They don't deserve it. I get it. I understand it. A lot of these people are low level. But here's the thing. Whenever you have a low level person, you then have a mid-level person, and then you generally have an upper-level person or a high-level person. Don't tell me these low-level people just break the law or allegedly break the law out of doing this with not being told to. Come on, stop. We're not that dumb. A relatively low-level player. Well, you're low-level or you're relatively low-level. Either you're low-level or you're not. Is that like being a little pregnant? A relatively low-level player in the city's Democratic Party charged criminally with absentee ballot fraud in connection with some recent mayoral primaries is expected today to be sentenced to probation. She took a plea deal. We've been talking about this, but that's not my issue here. Josephine Edmonds pleaded guilty to knowingly being present when a voter signed their ballot. Illegal possession of an absentee ballot, failing to register as required with the town clerk, as well as tampering with a witness at a court appearance in July. Does this woman or does anybody concerned with this case understand that things are wrong? You're not supposed to do this. And I'm sick and tired of hearing high-level people in Bridgeport say, well, you know, we tell them that. Do you? Who's minding the store here? Kind of a rhetorical question, wink, wink, nod, nod. Who's minding the store here? Josephine Edmonds pleaded guilty to knowingly being present when a voter signed their ballot. You're not supposed to do that. Illegal possession of an absentee ballot. You're not supposed to do that. Failing to register is required with the town clerk. You should register. As well as tampering with a witness at a court appearance in July. None of this happens by accident. There are certain levels of winks and nods that go on in this city that never seem to stop. I'm sorry. Well, what do you know, Paul? You don't live in Bridgeport. Of course I don't. But then again, you know, people who judge boxing matches aren't throwing punches either, but they have their scorecard. A plea deal in the case calls for a 3-year suspended sentence for Edmonds, who's free on a promise to appear in court. The charges are punishable by a maximum penalty of up to 25 years in prison. So she could have gone to jail for 25 years, and now it's a 3-year suspended sentence. So what's going to happen? And again, I'm not in any way, shape, or form saying that we need to throw certain people in some of the worst prisons here. But is this going to deter anything? Once again, the plea deal in the case calls for a 3-year suspended sentence for Edmonds. She's free on a promise to appear in court. The charges are punishable by up to a maximum penalty of up to 25 years in prison. So, all right, 25 years, I think we can say is a little excessive for this, maybe. I mean, look, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a defense attorney. I'm not a prosecutor. I'm a dumb talk show host here that tries to make sense of this all for you and I. So, again, the plea deal, and it was, but we don't know whether it's gone through yet or not. It's likely to go through today. If we see anything on it, we'll let you know. But a plea deal in the case calls for a 3-year suspended sentence for Edmonds. The charges are punishable by a maximum penalty of up to 25 years in prison. So most people see that. People with a circulated, with brain circulation, see that and say, well, wait a minute. She could have gone to jail for up to 25 years, but okay, maybe that's excessive. But now she does no jail time or she does probation. It's a joke, people. This whole freaking thing is a joke. And guess what? We're getting no excuse absentee ballots in a few years. If you don't think that this isn't going to get worse in places other than Bridgeport, you're out of your mind. You're drunk. You're high. Edmonds is among four people charged with election fraud connected to absentee ballots in the 2019 election. We're not even talking about 2023. In the 2019 election, which propelled incumbent Mayor Joe Ganim to a win over primary challenger Marilyn Moore, who won more votes cast on Election Day. Those charged include Wanda Jeter Pataki. That's familiar, huh? City Councilman Alfredo Castillo. And Edmonds, who supported Moore. So, of course, this is not going to end. Prosecutors say Edmonds, a Marilyn Moore canvasser, was present while several members of a Bridgeport family completed absentee ballots. That's illegal. And allegedly took the ballots from them and failed to file necessary paperwork with the city's clerk, all Class D felonies. Punishable by up to 5 years in prison, and she's going to get nothing. Now, maybe you don't put her in prison for years, but I don't know, a couple of weeks, a month, you send a message? And this is why people in Bridgeport are frustrated, and this is why a lot of people in Connecticut laugh at Bridgeport. Because apparently here, unless this plea deal goes awry, what's going to happen here? What's going to change? Is not the purpose of sending people to prison or coming down on them hard? It does that not serve a purpose of trying to deter other people from doing it? But again, and I don't know this woman. I wouldn't know this woman if she passed me on the street. But she's pled guilty to several charges that could have landed her, according to this story, in prison for up to 25 years. Okay, that's a little excessive. Maybe. So she gets a 3-year suspended sentence. She could have gone to jail for 25 years. This is a joke. There is no serious effort to stop the absentee ballot abuse in Bridgeport. There just isn't. If there was, you wouldn't see 25 years worth of possible felony charges pleaded down to a 3-year suspended sentence. You just wouldn't. In a world where there's actually enough oxygen circulating in people's brains, this wouldn't happen. So I ask you, is this all a joke? Seriously, and this is our question of the day. Will any convictions, jail time, and or plea deals put an eventual stop to the absentee ballot abuse in Bridgeport elections? I don't think so. Here you had a conviction. You have a likely plea deal for 3 months of a suspended sentence. You tell me what's going to change. Tell me. I dare you. And why are entire families getting absentee ballots? And you had a woman here who allegedly stood around and watched the family here, or this group of people, it's alleged, fill out absentee ballots. Really? Only in Bridgeport, my friend. Only in the Park City. All right, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So you tell me, Is this a joke? Am I caught in a vortex here? Does the city of Bridgeport, does the judicial system just, do they not care? If you don't care, just tell me. Just tell me, tell the good voters of Bridgeport, just tell me. That's all, and we'll move on here. Defendant in Bridgeport absentee ballot probe is expected to get probation. All right. Josephine Edmonds pleaded guilty in connection with the 2019 campaign to knowingly being present when a voter signed their ballot, illegal possession of an absentee ballot, failing to register as required with the town clerk, as well as tampering with a witness at a court appearance in July. She apparently, now again, we will update you on this. As soon as we get info here at WICC, there is apparently a plea deal in the case that calls for a 3-year suspended sentence. But the charges are punishable by up to 25 years in prison. So I ask you, here you have people looking at this case. And again, I'm not a prosecutor. I'm not a defense attorney. I'm not a judge. I'm not an expert in election law. I'm not any of those things, but I'm a person sitting here who goes, well, wait a minute now. If the goal here is to deter this from happening in the future and to get the city of Bridgeport out of the rut of people's minds where they say, oh, Bridgeport, yeah, whatever, which should not be applicable here. It just shouldn't. Okay. And then you see 25 years worth of charges pleaded down to a 3-year suspended sentence. Then what's the point? Why even try? What do you want, Paul? You want her to rot in jail? I'm not saying that. I'm saying that when people look at this and they see, wait a minute, 25 years technically worth of infractions here is pleaded down to a 3-year suspended sentence. So what is that? What does that achieve? What does that prove? Well, Paul, how long should she go to jail for? I don't know. I'm not a judge. I'm not a prosecutor. I'm not an expert in election law. What I am an expert is in perception is reality for people. That's what I'm. I think I'm pretty good in at judging here. After being in this business now for, let's say, geez, I don't know, 41 years. Perception is reality, and people are going to look at this and they're going to say, well, there you go. It's a joke. It's a joke. I'm not saying this. I have no idea who this woman is. Maybe we need to change the laws. I don't know. But people on a surface, on the surface here, on a surface level, are going to say, there you go. There you go. Bridgeport, which is unfair. It is unfair, and it's a stigma. It's a stigma of rot in the election system here. It's got to stop. But yet, instead of our legislators putting a stop to it, they are tacitly encouraging this by saying, hey, you won't even need a reason to get an absentee ballot. Because, of course, and then what do they do if a Republican or somebody like me says, hey, are we sure we want to do this? You want to disenfranchise somebody. Really? You don't like black people, do you? What the hell are you talking about? Oh, well, you know, if you don't make it super easy to vote, you clearly want to go back to Jim Crow slavery. I mean, that's the idiocy we're served up with here in Connecticut on a daily freaking basis. A plea deal in the case calls for a 3-year suspended sentence for Edmonds, who's free on a promise to appear in court. The charges are punishable by a maximum penalty of up to 25 years in prison. Okay, that's a lot. I mean, you have drug dealers, you have hardened criminals that don't do that. I'm not saying put her in jail for 25 years. What I am saying is, we need to revamp the laws here. We need to come up with new guidelines because you know what? The average person, who sees this and says, wait a minute, 25 years worth of charges, technically, I know nobody would go to jail for 25 years there, but technically 25 years of charges here is pleaded down, I should say, to a 3-year suspended sentence. Now, maybe there's an ankle monitor involved here or a home confinement. I don't know what that is. But my God, if that's actually what it is, and I could be wrong here. You know, this article could be wrong. I don't think it is. I don't have any reason to believe it. But you know what? People are going to look at this. I'm telling you, they're going to look at this and they're going to say, what a freaking joke. They're going to say the city of Bridgeport and the state of Connecticut just are not serious about setting an example to make people not do this again. And I usually have this gentleman on this time every Friday, but I'm taking a day off tomorrow to do some other side stuff, so we'll have him on today. We can all understand the calendar. So I asked Chris Caruso about Thursday, and he happily obliged. Mr. Caruso, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good, Paul. I hope you're doing well.
I am. And Chris, I got to tell you, though, my head was exploding earlier today on the show where, sadly, Chris, we see essentially, now look, I'm no lawyer, I'm no prosecutor, no judge, but what looked to me, Chris, and you can, if you think I'm wrong, please tell me, another slap on the wrist here in a case in the ongoing Bridgeport absentee ballot mess, and a scenario where here's a slap on the wrist and the good people of Bridgeport are probably wondering, well, where's the justice here?
You know, Paul, I didn't see the article, so fill me in if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure, Chris. This is the story here, and this has to do with one of the 2019 charges here. This is what she's referred to as a minor player in the Bridgeport absentee ballot scandal. This is Josephine Edmonds. She pleaded guilty to, and you've obviously now heard the name, yeah, guilty to four charges that Chris could have gotten her. Now, we know the maximums in this stuff, Chris, are rarely applied, but sure. 25 years in prison. But Judge Sherry Murphy signed off today, Chris, on a 3-year suspended sentence.
Wow.
And again, goes back to the Marilyn Moore campaign. So again, Chris, you've got something here that if I'm in Bridgeport, I'm like, when does this end?
You're absolutely right, Paul. And as a Bridgeport resident, I'm saddened that such light sentences are given out. The only hope I have is that maybe they're using people like Edmonds,
yeah,
to provide information on some of the bigger offenders. You know, many times the prosecutor does that because they're not really after the little people; they're after the big ones, mm-hmm, so that really steal big time. So they may be just going up the food chain. I hope that's what the case is. But, again, we've said this before. Very lean sentences that are given out will not be a deterrent.
Yeah.
People will do it again.
Mm-hmm.
But once you start making people serve jail time, it will stop or tremendously be curbed. And it has to be, Paul. So, yeah, I'm not happy with that, what you've told me. My only hope is, though, that the prosecutor is gathering information from her that can be used against others in the case. Some of the people that, you know, stole a lot more absentees, stronger indictments and things of that sort.
Yeah. Chris, and it's interesting you mention that, Chris Caruso, because when you get around to reading the story, if you scroll down to the end of the story, I guess, yep, Ms. Edmonds had a public defender, a gentleman named James Pastore. And he said, listen, she was a minor player in this whole thing. She wants to put the matter behind her. And he said, and Chris, it's interesting, it's prescient you said this, because Pastore's quote here to the Connecticut Post is, quote, "It's unfortunate that the people directing the action were never investigated or arrested," unquote. And
right,
he said again, quote, "Certainly my client was not the mastermind of the operation, unquote. There you go.
But, you know, all these attorneys say that. The fact is, if a person breaks the law, they break the law.
Yeah.
You know, whether they're the mastermind or whether the soldier carrying out the orders.
Yeah.
Breaking the law is breaking the law. And in Bridgeport, we've seen the abuse of the absentee ballot, which, frankly, have allowed people to cheat. So good, decent people that run for office don't, because they realize they're not going to win, because the cheaters are just ripping them off with the absentee ballots. Now, I've known and I've watched cases over the years where prosecutors usually are trying to go after the big fish, if you will. So maybe information, you know, when he says there's more people out there that are bigger in the scheme of things or the mastermind, maybe she's provided information. Because if she's the possibility of her serving 25 years.
No.
And I think she's an older woman.
Yeah.
So she probably realized, hey, I don't want to serve 25 years, but if I could provide evidence and information, that may be what it is. But, you know, these attorneys always say this stuff. Well, they were the small minnows in the pond. You know, it doesn't matter. It takes a group of minnows to break the law.
Yeah.
Regardless whether you're the big, you know, whether you're the whale or whether you're the minnow, doesn't matter.
Yeah. And, you know, Chris, and just to wrap on this,
sure.
I get a little tired. I'm sure you do. And we've heard people from various campaigns say, well, my God, I tell my people, you know, follow the law. I certainly don't sanction this. My God, there's what's that old phrase from that movie? There's gambling going on in this establishment.
Exactly.
Right.
They paid $8,600 as a consultant to a person who was robbing absentee ballots.
Yeah.
So you could see that this is deeper than what we see, Paul. And I think what they're doing is trying to, you know, kind of sort out the big players and figuring, oh, how do we get to them?
Okay.
And that may be what's going on here. I don't know. And they put her on a 3-year probation. The fact is, if she does it again, she'll probably serve jail time. So let's hope she learns by it. But I think they're going after big fish. It's very much in a municipal corruption case. They're going after the people who give orders and who direct them, not because they're letting the small people go, but they're using them to gather evidence and information.
You know, Chris, I sure hope so, because the average person, Chris, and I said this earlier, the average person sees this and they go, oh, there's a... It, to the average person, Chris, it looks like a slap on the wrist. You know what I mean?
Oh, you're absolutely, Paul, and I feel the same way. I'm disturbed by it. I'm disgusted by it because, frankly, she should have served some more time. No question about it. Maybe a year in jail, you know, maybe... You know, weekend confinement at home, which they do, whatever, because of her age.
Sure.
I get all that stuff. But my hope is, you know, as a Bridgeporter, I'm hoping that there's a bigger fish that they're trying to fry her. And hopefully information she's given can help them do that to assure a conviction, you know.
Yeah, we hope.
I'm hoping.
We hope. Yeah. Cross fingers, Chris. Yeah. Chris Caruso, as always. Chris, thank you for coming on a day early. We appreciate it. Yeah. Have a happy weekend, and we'll chat down the road, sir. Thank you.
Okay, Paul.
All right. Chris Caruso there, former Democratic state rep. Return visit from this gentleman. He's been on the show, I checked back, 4 or 5 times. Kenneth Raposa. Ken Raposa, seasoned business and foreign affairs reporter with more than 20 years of experience, stationed abroad as a staff reporter for the Wall Street Journal in Brazil. Also, former senior contributor to Forbes for 12 years, 2011 to 2023. He covered the BRIC nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and Mexico, and other developing countries as well. Some news on tariffs and some news, and I think we discussed this before, with the Chinese government and China's manufacturing and drugs, prescription drugs. Candace, Paul here in Connecticut once again. How are you? Good to have you back.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, before we get to the Ethan Allen stuff and the tariffs here, which everybody seems to have a different opinion on, you wrote an interesting thing here, and I think we discussed this once before, but people need to hear this. The role of China and manufacturing drugs and what may be coming down the pike. Talk about that.
Sure. Well, the pharmaceutical market is part of the broad biotech world, right?
Yeah.
So, and that's part of China's Made in 2025 program, and that Made in 2025 program is a list of sectors of the economy that China wants to dominate or play a big role in. And so what they do in those sectors is they control or they try to have players in all levels of the supply chain. So soup to nuts strategy, something the United States doesn't do. We're more like innovators, then we come up with an idea, and then we outsource it to be made into whatever it's going to be made into. But China's the opposite. China says, no, we want to have players all across the supply chain. And on pharmaceuticals, whether it's generic drugs, which they play a big role in, they're a big supplier to India, which is our biggest supplier of generic drugs, or advanced biotech, right? This is where China also is a huge player. In fact, American multinationals like Pfizer, they will tell you that they can't even do R&D or preclinical trials on new drugs without a Chinese lab doing it for them.
Wow.
So they're so enmeshed in China that it's very difficult for the U.S. to do anything without China, because we don't have that soup to nuts pharmaceutical supply chain. We don't have it on generics, which are the low-cost drugs. There's numerous reasons for that. And on the biotech side, the advanced stuff, the branded stuff, a lot of the research on the new types of drugs that are coming out in the future, that is being done. That is almost fully reliant on China. And all the big players will tell you this.
So Ken, with the major American drug companies, and some of them are not necessarily completely American, but the big players in this country, and frankly, the big players that, you know, people may have their 401ks invested in or their pensions invested in, is that dominance and the continued seeking, Ken, of that dominance by China, is that an economic threat or not? Is it just kind of a necessary evil? How do you see that?
I think it's a necessary evil for China, right? But I also think, but it's sort of what I call it. It's more like a mad scientist. It's sort of a, you know, it's an evil genius at work, really. Yeah. In China, the way they plan it out, as I said, it's a soup to nuts strategy. The United States does not have that. The West does not play that way. So, as far as in the future, if you want to be a country like that. Let's take something simple like oncological drugs, cancer drugs.
Yeah.
We want to be the guys who invent the new cancer drug, the new injection that cures prostate cancer.
Okay.
You got it. Boom. Injection. It's over. That stuff is increasingly going to be researched in China. It already is. Or it's going to be innovated and made there.
Wow.
So what happens in the future is, now when we think of drugs, we think of, you know, pharmaceuticals, we think of the big brand names. We think of Amgen, we think of AbbVie, we think of Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer. But in our lifetimes, there will be different – those companies all rely on China, as right, already.
Mm.
But in the future, it'll be companies that are Chinese. Maybe they'll have – maybe Pfizer will be owned by a Chinese company in 5 years, for all I know.
Wow.
So those are the companies that are going to be the leaders – right, China's positioned itself to be the leaders in advanced biotech in the future, right? That's where the money is made. So Ozempic was made by a Western company, but in the future, that's going to be made by a Chinese company.
Wow.
And everybody knows it. And everybody knows it. And if it's not made by a Chinese company, then the Western company that made it didn't do it without the help of a Chinese lab.
And I guess, Ken, finally on China here, before we shift gears, Ken Raposa is the guest, by the way. You know, there's got to be a fear, right? I mean, what happens, for example, if there's a military skirmish between the U.S. and China, or, you know, they go to take back Taiwan and we say, don't do that, and we threaten him. I mean, is there any worry that China will say, hey, you know, nice cancer drugs you got there. Too bad. Be a pity if we stop sending them to you, right? Is that a problem?
Well, sure, that is a risk. I think the Defense Department worries about those things. I'm not a historian here, so I'm curious, actually, when you say that, and I hear this argument all the time, is that what we saw happen maybe during the Cold War?
Yeah.
Well, maybe you could say that wasn't the case because our supply chains weren't enmeshed. We weren't reliant on Russia or the Soviet Union for anything like we are China. So it would be a problem. I mean, China has already – let's look at during the pandemic, for example, when China's population was suffering the same thing we were, and something as basic as, hey, look, that medicine or that equipment that you need that you only get from us, guess what? We need it too.
Wow.
And we actually have more people than you, so we're not going to export it to you because you understand we have a problem here. So it could be something as almost as benign as that. You would, that's a reasonable thing for the Chinese to do, you would think, right? That's a reasonable reason to hold back exports. And they've also held back exports on other things for geopolitical reasons that not related to drugs, even though I believe they have threatened to do that in the past. They could do that, and that is a very strong source of leverage. What you have here is the Chinese government essentially gets free lobbying by Pfizer and others. Because if you were to say we're going to create a full soup to nuts biotech, you know, supply chain in the United States from generics on up to the branded drugs, which are also made here in the US. That China might say, well, if you do that, well, you know, we're going to, you know, maybe we're not going to allow this to happen in China with you, Pfizer. And maybe, and then Pfizer goes, hey, we can't have a situation where we can't work with them. Yeah, you can't have that. Exactly. It's what I call the free lobbying rule, you know, that most multinationals give to the Chinese government.
The website prosperousamerica.org, Kenneth Raposa, for a couple more minutes. Ken, I guess you did a piece here with the boss at Ethan Allen, the CEO, talked about how that firm is going to manage tariffs and inflation. So what are you hearing on that that angle?
Yeah, so what he said was interesting, because we always hear about how tariffs are going to transfer into higher prices for consumers. And the D-student view on that is, if my Nikes are tariffed at 20%, my $100 Nikes are tariffed at 20%, my Nikes must now cost $120, because 20% of $100 is 20. That's never the case, obviously, because the Nike doesn't cost $100. It probably costs 15, right?
Yeah.
Right? So that's, you're tariffed on that, actually. The 20% is tariffed onto the 15, not the 100 that you see.
Not the retail,
sporting
no.
goods.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what he said at Ethan Allen was, look, we're talking to some of our, this is what all corporations do this. We're talking to our suppliers. We're seeing what they can reduce, what they can do for us. And we're doing the same thing. And we might even shrink our margins, right, on some things in order to make sure that our customers don't, you know, go somewhere else, right?
Mm.
I mean, again, if it's like a $5,000 sofa becomes a $6,000 sofa, well, if you can get a $4,000 one made in China and a Chinese furniture company doesn't care if they get a profit, well, most Americans are going to choose that, actually,
because
you know, money doesn't grow on trees. And we are living in a time where the cost of living is going up. And so people are going to do what they can afford. And that's why Ethan Allen said that. We're not going to turn that, or we're not going to pass that cost on to consumers, or at least not a lot of it, because if we do, we could definitely lose market.
Yep. You can read Ken's stuff, folks. Fascinating stuff. Go to the Coalition for a Prosperous America. That's prosperousamerica.org, and check out all the stuff and more from Ken Raposa. Hey, Ken, good to chat with you again, my friend. Appreciate it. We'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Likewise, Paul.
All right. Appreciate it.